Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Flats and Shanks podcast. I'm doing the intro this week because I've just had a Barocca.
Oh,
I've just had a Barocca energy tab. I know what that means. I'm basically on steroids now.
But when you go to the toilet, just remember you've had a Barocca and you're not dehydrated, okay?
Yeah.
Because it comes out like fake tan.
If I have one like in the car on the M4, M5, in the M4 corridor, and I stop at the services for wee-wees, I often feel a bit self-conscious because I wonder if someone's looking over thinking, he's dehydrated, unhealthy bloke, how long has he got left?
Not long.
I feel great. It's Six Nations time, isn't it, Tommy? So are you allowed to talk about being busy without sounding smug or like you're complaining?
No.
Is there a middle ground?
No, because you're not allowed to complain about being busy since COVID, all right?
Oh, God, absolutely not complaining. But are you... So the standard conversation when you see people is, God, busy time for you, isn't it, Six Nations? But you're all over the place. And the answer actually is, yeah, which is, you know, feel very grateful. But how... When someone asks you at the moment if you're busy, what do you say?
Like a Japanese prisoner of war. But a happy one.
Oh, God.
That's Alan Partridge, all right? That's Alan Partridge.
Yeah,
okay. Before anyone starts to complain.
Yeah. So you're busy. You are busy. That's great.
I've just been to Ireland, haven't I? Just done a tour to Ireland, locker room tour to Ireland, where I also had Barocca.
Did you?
Every morning. Yeah.
Diorolite. Yeah, I take it with me when I
every
travel.
Every morning. Milk thistle. Apparently, that's really good for hangovers, according to Reese Williams.
Okay.
And any other goodness I could get inside me, like gourmet burger and chips.
Yeah.
Guinness for the iron. Baby Guinness, just as for the sweetness. Need a little bit of
sugar. I know,
like,
people always say, look, if you want to work out, if you want to train enough, and if you want to eat well enough, you can do it, no matter what your schedule. Yeah. I don't want it quite enough not to see my exercise and nutrition regimes, not that I've got a regime, but my nutrition and exercise just drop off a freaking cliff during the Six Nations. Just drop off a cliff. Mm. I'm eating Haribos at 10 in the morning, mate.
Well, I got back on Sunday. I did a 15K bike ride yesterday, just sweat it out.
Oh my
watching
God.
Masters of the Air.
Oh, yeah.
Which is good.
All right.
And I've just done a 2.5 hour walk with my lovely wife because I've got a walk coming up on Monday. Yeah. Which was, I sure did about 8.5 miles, but I've got to do 26 miles on Monday.
Train together, stay together.
No.
Lift
together, lift together, stay together.
Train together, stay together. No. Oh dear. Walk together, talk together. They say when you walk alongside someone, that's the best way to have a conversation because the lack of eye contact, the passivity of walking shoulder to shoulder instead of sitting face to face is better.
Well, if she wants me, conversation. She can just tap me on my shoulder and I'll take my AirPods out and say, "What's up, love?
What are you doing here? Who invited you?
Podcast.
Who invited you?" Oh, great. So that's so it says good things about your relationship then. You okay at the moment?
Yeah, thanks, Dave.
Just checking in, mate.
Yeah, it's obviously a busy time at the moment because we're away and, you know, it's tough on them.
Yeah.
But it'll soon be over.
Yeah.
And this is, this. I mean, make hay, Dave. Make hay.
I share my diary with my wife and just makes it easier. So when something pops up, I put something in my diary, it pops up in hers. And today she got up, she was in bits because of a rough night with the baby and hadn't really slept. So she went back to bed for an hour before I took the kids to school and all that. So it's like, you know, when you're getting an extra hour in bed before the kids go to school at 8 a.m, you know, you've got up early. So she was like, "What are you doing today?" And I was like, "Check your diary." So she checks it and she's like, "Right, are we having any time together today on your day off? Tuesday off?" I was like, "Yes, I will be free from 2:30 p.m. until 4:30 p.m. That is family time."
Wow. What are you going to do? Monopoly?
Hopefully watch telly and eat toast is what I'm hoping.
That's not a bad option.
But going to the footy tonight. So I'm out tonight, you see. Going to the footy tonight.
Millwall playing, are they?
Yeah, I'm wearing my Stone Island.
Love that. You were the first person I remember that had Stone Island.
There you go. See, I'm original, mate. I'm an original Burberry. Casual. And what?
Burberry.
I don't think I have Burberry.
Oh, you did. Your Burberry
growing
trousers.
Up in Maidstone, right?
Your Burberry trousers. Patrick Cox shoes.
I had Patrick Cox shoes. Growing up in Maidstone, that's the background I'm from. Where, you know, it's easy to. I know you're not doing that, but it's easy to kind of people look down on that or whatever. But it was. The environment I grew up in, it was aspirational to have those things. And it's like, I don't think you'd be proud of that. Burberry was toast by then. It had been taken over by the people. They didn't want to take it over. So Burberry, I think Burberry's back now. They got it back. They're high class again. The problem with Stone Island is, like, I really like Stone Island clothes, but you do, I don't massively care, but you do look like you are off to headbutt someone in a pub somewhere. But that should do some ace gear. But yes, we're off to the footy tonight. Bar City against Braintree Town. Going on.
Oh, who's your favourite Bar City player?
Oh, I like Steven.
Yeah, he's pretty good, isn't he?
He generally plays in and he's a great communicator. He's got good repeated speed and he's got a lovely touch. And the manager seems like a great bloke, the sort of guy you'd really play for.
I should have said, who's going to the football?
I'm going with my two big daughters, bigger daughters.
Oh, nice.
They're not big, they're just bigger than the others.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going for it tonight. We're going to have a couple of darts, a few pints of cider, and then go steaming into the football. Apparently, my mate Samler told me that in non-league football, one of the best bits is the fans swap ends at half time so that your team are always attacking the goal
that's good.
Attacking your end. Yeah.
Bit of a ball ache, though, like having to walk all the way around this side of the stadium.
Yeah, it's not that big, mate. But also, I think if you're losing, like if you're getting battered, you actually want to be at the end where there's some goals scored, don't you?
If I'm at the stadium, this is my seat. I don't want to move. Yeah. I'm quite happy.
I don't think there are seats. I could be wrong. I haven't been before. Well, it's the Twerton Park Football Stadium in Bath, and CrossFit used to be there. So I went there a few times to do CrossFit. Don't know if I mentioned that a few years ago, but I never went into the actual stadiums. This is my first time at Bath City.
I had to have a break walking up the stairs of the Aviva on Saturday.
Did you?
We had Category 3 tickets, which are, you know, you get Category 2, Category 1, obviously 1 being the best. We all went for
Category
3.
What's the
bottom
category?
3. I don't know if there's a 4. Well, you've got to manage costs, haven't you, Dave? We're all together, so
yeah.
But I was walking up the stairs, and I actually had to have a little break halfway just to catch my breath.
Oh God!
It was a long old trek.
Well, I was thinking about this, right? I don't like air travel, and that's not because I'm scared of flying. I just think it's too hard. Like, I think it's just too hard. And might have mentioned this on the pod the other day, but I flew to Dublin the other week for whatever it was. I forget where I flew. Yeah, Ireland against somebody. And anyway, got to Heathrow, got
France.
out the car, and walked in. And because it was ITV and they're good at what they do, I had fast track security. So I just walked into the fast track queue, noticed that the normal queue wasn't full anyway. There's hardly anyone queuing up. Quite a busy airport. And I walked straight through. I said, John, they said, don't have to take your laptops out, leave everything in, just stick it through, mate. I said, take my shoes off, belt. Now you're all right. Watch. Now you're all right. Walked straight through, and like nothing, straight through, picked up my bag and went. And I was like, what's that? He goes, mate, it's the new machines. I think it was at T5. It's the new machines. You don't need to take everything
Oh,
out.
wow. Take my
And
shoes
it was
off in Dublin.
no joke, mate. I'm not exaggerating when I say I reckon 3 minutes after I shut the car door, by the taxi door outside the front, I was through wondering where I was going to have coffee. It was that quick. It was like straight, almost like I'd walk straight through. Oh, heaven. So the other terminals are getting those machines now. But anyway, my point being, I was went to wherever I went the other day. Oh God, Lille for France, Italy. And I was thinking the amount of walking I did from when I left my hotel at Edinburgh Airport at stupid o'clock Sunday morning to fly to Brussels and then get a taxi to Lille for the game. The amount of walking I did before I got on a plane and when I got off the like around getting on and off planes, I was like, you've actually got to be, if you were less than totally mobile, this would be a proper trek. Like, I was imagining my dad, who is perfectly mobile, but he's nearly 80. I was like, this would be verging on too much walking for most people. It was, so, I reckon I did 30 minutes of walking.
We got to the hotel we all stayed at called the Camden Court on Friday afternoon, 12:30 in the afternoon.
Straight on the beers, was it?
And quite a few were doing their own thing, but there was a big group. We said, right, let's go find an Irish bar or restaurant. We need some lunch. We'll go for some lunch. We walked out the hotel. I'm not joking, mate. We walked for, oh, how long was it? It must have been 5 seconds. Found a bar at the end of
Done.
the hotel road called the Bleeding Horse. Straight in there, bosh. Lee Burner ordered for our table. He said five burgers and chips, five Guinness. Perfect. That was it. He didn't even ask. He didn't even ask what we
You don't
wanted.
need to with you, mate. You're always a burger guy.
He just went for it. Saw a few. There's quite a
Oh.
few fans in there. Saw Kieran Azzarati's dad, Kieran
Oh, yeah.
Maserati. Yeah, his old man was in there. It was heaving. Dublin was heaving with Welsh fans.
Oh,
I just got
great.
off the phone to Gethin Hughes. You know Gethin Hughes? He's BBC Scrum 5 producer now. He
Yeah.
used to work at Sunset and Vine. He rang me up for about the game on the weekend on Friday. It's Edinburgh Ospreys. And first thing he said to me was, "A little bit drunk in Ireland, weren't you?" I was like, "Who've you been speaking to?" Reckons Andrew Coombs saw me and said there was no point having a conversation with me. Ah, oh, because I'm a bloody lad. I said, I was off the clock. You know, it was 12 o'clock at night. I'm allowed to do what I want.
So
Honestly,
tell me,
man.
Tommy, about your just tell me about your schedule, please. So you take all these lads over there, but hang on, hang on. I've made an assumption then. Are there any women on the trip?
Yep, I was.
So you take all the lads and ladies.
Yep.
Tell us what your trip is, please.
I don't kiss and tell, mate. You don't bloody kiss, that's your problem. We left Cardiff at 9:50. Aer Lingus arrived in Dublin. We somehow lost Lee Byrne from departures. Did a name check, everyone there, yep. And we walked towards where the bus was. Lost Bernie on the way. Don't know how.
Yeah.
He came out the multi-story car park. He was looking for his sunglasses. I don't know, mate. It was the most bizarre thing ever. Straight on the bus. Got to the
You never know
Camden
with
Court.
Bernie, do you? You never know with Bernie.
Checked in. And then we popped out, a bit of lunch, shower and change, then booked a bar called Fitzsimmons in the evening, which was like a proper Irish bar, three floors, put a tab on. And then the next day, got the bus to the Bath pub. We had a nice little outdoor area where we had a little bit of a sing song. It was only my crew could get in there. So it was a complimentary bar. Loads and loads of baby Guinness being smashed. Yeah. I was like, yeah, go for it. Please. Yeah, as many as you want. As many as you want. and then to the game. Bus back then to Lemon and Duke, which was where we had a bit of food, some platters, watched Scotland, England. And then everyone sort of went to their own sort of bar then after that at about 8 o'clock. I went to Cafe Insane. Insane. If you're like me.
Insane in the membrane.
And then that was it, boy. And then flight home. Mate. Yeah. So all fine. Quite heavy.
Well done.
As you can imagine.
Yeah, sounds it. Yeah.
But no issues, which is good.
That's good. Well done.
Yeah. No, what about your weekend?
Oh God, Tommy. Oh God. Where do I start? Well, I'll tell you what I did on Wednesday night. I went to Bristol to see Archie Curzon. Rigby's pod. An old chum of mine. So I went over to see him and we did a little live show for some guests in a pub in Bristol. And that was good fun. And on Thursday, Tommy, I went to London and met George Shooter and did the Under the Posts lunch. They're great, actually, Tony Andrew. They're really good. So we had a lovely lunch there, and that's just a nice day, really. And it's, you call it work if you want, but I just get to see, because I lived with George Shooter when I was at Sarries, as you know, when we were at Sarries. So really, I look at that as, we do have a chat with the guests and it's really nice, and you sit on a stool for an hour and have a good crack and have a really good laugh. But actually, I get to spend 4 or 5 hours with Georgie, which is good fun. Had a lovely steak and then got the train back to Bath and went out with a couple of mates, including Lewis Moody and his wife, and had a steak, which is good. So that was nice. Then Friday, Tommy, flew up to Edinburgh and then hosted the Old Enemy Dinner, which we do every year in the corresponding city, in the relevant city. And that was great. It's about 400 people. It's really good crack. And quite often there's loads of ex-internationals there. So there's loads of Scottish legends there. And Scotty Murray was there, our old mate from Sarries, a Scotland second row. He's lived in San Diego for 8 years now. Just stopped coaching out there. He started his own business and, great. What a great guy. Absolutely brilliant. And put on a bit of weight as well, which I was pleased about. He still looks great. So he's not overweight, but I wondered, because he was naturally a very slim guy, like tall and thin. I wondered if he would actually fade away when he retired, but he looks really healthy. He looks healthy. So I had a good laugh at that on stage and did a bit of fat shaming, because even though I'm fatter than him, I had the mic and he didn't, and he's not fat, which is why it works. He just hated it. So that was great. But Martin Corrie was up there, and Leon Lloyd and Darren Garforth, like Leicester, you guys up. So that's a brilliant dinner. But yeah, because there are so many guys there, like ex-internationals there, you quite often you'll have multiple sort of Q&As and chats and all that. And the organiser, who's a mate, well, he's called Stuart Reed, he played for Scotland. He's like, here's an idea. Why don't we just... You've worked with a lot of people. Tell me who you think's really good, and let's just have one really good chat with one person. And he said, before I could suggest one, he said, what do you think of Wayne Barnes? And I said, he's awful. They got him anyway. No, I said, just get Barnsley up there for half an hour, 40 minutes. Barnsley's amazing. So that was what we did. It was a great dinner. And then Johnny Gould did the auction and raised a ton of money. So they were over. I did a bit of fundraising at the start. Johnny did an auction. We did, I think, north of 300,000 quid.
Oh, wow. That's massive.
Among other charities, My Name's Doddy, and amazing. So it's great. And then spent Saturday doing I spent Saturday doing what we call corporate, but joshing around, having chats with people at Murrayfield before and after Scotland, England. And I did quite a lot of the stuff. Everyone I did with Ryan Wilson.
Unlucky.
Now, that, or lucky, that is, now that is value for money. You buy a ticket and you want to be entertained and you want someone to, you know, have a bit of character and personality, you know, instead of just giving stock answers to sporting questions. He is definitely an option.
I work with him on a URC, mate.
Of course you do. Wild guy.
Brings his kids to work sometimes.
When we're talking about ADHD, right? And he said something like, oh, you mentioned on your pod. And as he's talking to me, I'm not joking. I'm not joking. I said, have you ever been tested? He's jumping up and down on the spot as we're talking. He's jumping up and down as we're talking, holding a pint. He's jumping up and down. And I was like, yeah, I've been tested. Don't need to be tested. But I said, I think you're right, mate. I think you're right. So I said to him, don't ever change. Don't ever medicate. You're amazing, mate. He was flying around like a blue-ass fly at Murrayfield. He was everywhere and he was nowhere.
You want to see him after games. Like,
great fun.
He's obviously better at Glasgow because that's where he played. But he does all the chats with the boys after the games. It's brilliant because he's newly retired. So he knows them all. And he's just grabbing people. He's grabbing fans. Just having a little chat with them. They just send him out. Ryan, who have you got? And obviously all the Glasgow players sign autographs outside after. And he just grabs whoever he wants.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. It's great content.
I must say, I really enjoyed it. And, you know, loads of great lads up there. And Tom Wood was up there. I haven't seen Tom Wood for a while. Top fella. And met Stuart McInally, who I haven't met before. He is about 6'4 or 6'3, 6'4. I had no idea how big he was, but really nice guy. And just, it's a great day, that. It's just a great day and really, really enjoyable. And John Barkley and Ugo were like on stage before us and they left. And then Ryan and I went up and Ryan was late, of course, and he runs in and he says to the crowd, who was here just now? And they were like, oh, John Barkley and Ugo Monya. Oh my God, that must have been so fucking boring. Like, the lads are still in the room, I think. Like, it's deliberate, you know. Goes, right, let's have it then. Let's have it. And he's just like, that is absolutely brilliant, mate. Just
set the tone.
Great fun. I must say, you know, we always have fun doing these things. You make your own fun, don't you? But he's the first guy. He'll listen. He might listen to this somewhat. He's the first guy where I've sat there, because you got to be yourself. I'm not, just because he's mad and wild. I'm not mad and wild. I'm probably a bit drier and I still get excited and whatever. But I thought, I'm not. You mustn't try and match this guy. You just got to try and feed off what he's saying a little bit. But he's one of the first guys that's made me really sit and think about what I'm going to deliver instead of just being complete. I was very relaxed and really enjoyed it. But in a fun way, it was like, what this guy is.
You wanted to get on the laugh-o-meter as well, didn't you?
Yeah, you can't be dominated. And equally, you can't turn into Timmy Mallett or the crazy guy in the office. Watch this. Watch me dance. Watch me do it. But you can't do that because it's not
Give
me.
Give generously to both dancers. If anything, mine was impromptu. Yes.
It was great. I really loved it. And then, early start.
Sharpened your senses is what you're trying to say.
Exactly,
isn't it?
That's exactly what it is. Yeah, you verbalise it perfectly. But then, early start, flew to Brussels, got a taxi to Lille, and then commentated on the France game, which was not that good right till the end. But got myself back to London that night. So people say, oh, you're in Lille. Lille's lovely. Like, no, I got a taxi to the stadium. And then I went to the commentator on the game, which was really fun. I love commentating, as you do. And then a taxi to the airport. No, taxi to Eurostar, basically, is how we had a bit of dinner first, but you're basically in and out. I didn't see any of Lille at all, but that's how it works. But great fun. Good.
Yeah.
It's nice, mate. And thing is, though, I don't like getting smashed. I don't like getting totaled on the beers, but you have a few beers every day. So you have a few beers here and you don't have a few beers before the game. You have a couple of glasses of wine with dinner and you have a glass of wine or beer on the train or whatever. And then my mate picked me up from St. Pancras and I've got a little, a little fridge in the front of my Land Rover in the armrest. And he's like, oh, there's a couple of cans of Guinness in there. I said, oh God, go on then. It's only 11:30 at night on a Sunday. Perfect time. So you're like, go on then. So you kind of came home and went straight to the spare room and didn't get out of bed till 9:45. It's bloody lovely.
Oh, good kipping.
Yeah. A sourdough with nice salty butter, apricot jam, and a posh cup of coffee. That's living the dream, mate.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Back into the rugby now. We've warmed them up enough.
Standard. You've got to try and keep them alive now.
Yeah. Ireland v Wales was the first game of the weekend. I think we all guessed what the result would be. I think the only thing that was going to let Ireland down really would be any ill discipline. And I thought, I mean, how much they want to win by, that was it. Because they're a total different team to Wales, as we know. They're a team that is peaking right now. Wales aren't. The Wales aren't near that level of organisation, of attack, of intelligence, I think, yet. Because they're a new team. And there's lots of new players in Wales. This Ireland team, yeah, and I mean, they did have Crowley and they did have Frawley, but the core of that team have been together for quite a while. To be honest, I thought Wales did pretty well for large parts of that game. But it's just Ireland's ability to look after ball constantly. You know, their attack just, even if they don't go anywhere, they realign really well and they recycle the ball well. Then all they're waiting for is like, some sort of half break, whether it's from Bundiaki, whether it's from Tagburn, all of a sudden then Wales backpedal, Ireland on the front foot, and that's when they're most dangerous. So I think Wales did okay. They'd be quite disappointed really that they let sort of, I think Tagburn score that try where he slipped through. Might have been Mackenzie Martin for a try. I think they could count themselves a little bit unlucky as well that they weren't awarded a try towards the end. Not that it would have made a difference to the game, but just reward for looking after the ball and red zone efficiency. Because I think there was a shot where Aaron Wainwright actually scored the try before he was pushed back. And then it was deemed no try. But, I mean, you look at, you know, Ireland had 9 entries into Wales's 22. They came away with over 3 points. Wales had 5 and come away with like 1.4. So they're not, Wales aren't that efficient in the red zone because they just don't have the power that a lot of teams have. So they're not going to do much damage, I don't think, just picking and going against big, powerful teams like that because they'll get hammered back. I thought Cam Winnett.
Yeah, let's talk about Cam Winnett. That's what I was going to say.
He's been the find, mate. And it's not just, I've said this before, it's not just his how brave he was in the air or how good he was under the high ball. It's his kicking game, I think, which is underrated as well. I think his counter-attack game, he's good on his feet. He's a good distributor as well. So he has been the find. Aaron Wainwright had another good game.
Yeah.
At number 8.
You know, he's better far, and better, isn't he?
He is. But it is a bit of a one-man show when it comes to carrying for Wales.
Yeah.
Like, he's the only one that really causes any huge amount of damage. And, you know, that's not Tommy Reffeld's job. You know, his job is to affect the breakdown more so. And he's good on his feet. And he's been excellent for his tournament as well. But in terms of big bruising carriers, they don't have anyone like on a level with Wainwright. You know, imagine Wales had 2 or 3 of them. It'd be amazing. It'd be wave after wave of attack. And he's good on his feet as well. So
he's very quick.
Yeah, he is.
Quite a specimen, isn't he?
He is. I think number 10 is still up for grabs with Wales.
Yeah, what I'm do you make convinced. Of what do you make of Costello then?
Work rate was good. I think he was fine. But I don't think it matters at the moment which 10 you have too much, because they're not getting enough clean front football.
Yeah.
So you know, it's so much easier when you're playing behind a pack going forward.
But you also don't want to be a young, inexperienced 10 in that. Well, you do, because you want to play for Wales, but it's much harder to make a name for yourself in a team that is struggling to give you the ball you want, isn't it? Like you think about Crowley dropping into the Ireland team, and exactly as you said, like, I'm sure Sam Costello, I see some great things, and I think he looks brave defensively and lots of important things. But then I think if you slotted him into the Ireland team, he probably would look twice the player. That's just how it goes, isn't it?
Yes, same as what we used to say about the All Blacks. You know, you could fit into the All Blacks. You and I could fit into the All Blacks easily, and we'd probably still win World Cups, because they just play a brand of rugby which is good and which gives you go for a ball. So, I mean, Goody made a career out of it, didn't he? Wearing a massive pack. I'm obviously joking. Goody was class. But it does help, doesn't it, as a 9 or a 10 when you've got that front football. I still think as well, the centre combination worked okay in the World Cup, and that was probably a big plus of Tompkins and George North. I'm not sure it's having the same effect at the moment with Wales. I think our game, like our set piece, is creaking a little bit. It's not where it should be. Line out and scrum, we look like we struggled in the scrum. And we're not a team that are brilliant at creating third, fourth, fifth phase. You know, so then we rely heavily on getting over that game line off first phase. And when that doesn't happen, that's when we get ourselves in a little bit of trouble, because we either try and overplay and we're not quite there yet, or we end up kicking away ball and possession. What I would like to see would be, I think, Mason Grady coming in, because for me, he's garlic bread. The future, right?
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
It's okay.
Yeah, but if he's getting 10, 15 minutes here or there, it's like, well, there are certain positions where he can make a big impact in that. Like, look at Oxenche coming on for South Africa. Like, because there are certain positions where you absolutely are going to get, you are absolutely going to use, be able get a chance to use your super strength if you have one. But he can come into the game in those outside channels and actually not see much ball for 15 minutes. Almost like, well, there are players being afforded 60 to 80 minutes every week for years and years, and they benefit because of it. And you sort of think he, apart from anything else, with those genetics, he's got to be worth a run of games. Like, that's, you know.
I've said it from the start. Like, he's been playing that well for Cardiff, that he's going to be the future for Welsh rugby. So get him in now.
Yeah.
Get him ready then for next season, the season after, you know, because he's not gaining that much experience by having cameos, especially against big teams like Ireland. So, yes, but mate, look, I didn't expect too much. I don't think anyone expected too much from Wales at the moment, because that's where they are. You know, they're starting again, and it takes a little bit of time, especially when you're playing a team and a well-drilled team like Ireland. I was impressed. Like, James Lowe has such an effect on the game as a winger. Like, his kicking game is outstanding. He might sort of shank the odd left-footed boot, but he's key to them. I thought Bundy Aki and Robbie Henshaw, as soon as they start to get a little bit of go-forward ball, it changed the game around a little bit. But Ireland's power was another level to Wales's. What they get from their front five is different to what most teams get from their front five. And like, realigning. I love how they realign, because you can see that they all know the exact distance they need to be, because they do. They must do it so often in training. So that they all, like the second pod, are always sort of making sure they're not too flat, they're not too deep off the first pod. So when that ball comes out the back to another ball player, normally Crowley, they're running onto ball and they're either an option or it's put behind them, but they're holding defences. So, yeah, well done, Ireland. Thought they were, they obviously deserved the win.
Yep.
And it's going to be, I cannot wait for England, Ireland.
That's punchy. Huge. Because Ireland, when I say we know all about how good they are, that they're one of the best sides in the world. They're comfortably at this stage. They were nowhere near their best and they won comfortably at the weekend. But they are comfortably the best team in this tournament. But that doesn't mean they go and beat everybody, because it's kind of, you know, the mighty Maidstone United might have fallen last night. But actually, you know, in there are certain sports where to a point, someone can come along and just, you know, win games they're not supposed to win. But generally, you know, it's not possible. But in a game of pro rugby, you've got 15, you know, incredibly strong, motivated blokes. And actually, you might find that England might have such a chip on their shoulder at the moment, because there's just nothing positive being said about England at the moment. There's just nothing. And one thing that can either have no effect on players because they brush it off and don't listen to it or read it. It can have a negative effect where puts their heads down for them, causes them to bow their heads a bit. Or it can actually really motivate them and say, well, we'll go out and prove a point.
Just before we get on to England, I do have to mention Calvin Nash. I think has been a great find.
In a really good tournament.
Very good. Been very good at Munster, but been really impressed with him and the way he's sort of fitted into Six Nations rugby. You know, his little offload over the top for James Lowe's try was just excellent. They know how to put teams away. They know where the space is and how to get the ball there, which I know sounds super basic.
Yeah.
But they do that. They're very good at it. England, Dave. Very good start for England.
A brilliant start. And you talk about James Lowe having an effect on the game. I was about to say, is there any winger in the Northern Hemisphere, at least at the moment, who has as much of an effect on a game?
Can't think of anyone.
Doohan van der Merwe had a very big effect on the game of the weekend.
Of course he does. I was thinking.
Overall, no, there isn't. James Lowe just does so much. But Doohan van der Merwe was... I mean, there's two ways to look at it. Well, no, there's not. There's one way to look at it. You look at, for example, the try he scores around the outside where he just gasses Slade initially, I think. And then, but you've got a pass, I think, from memory now. George Ford is reaching up above his head to catch a pass. So that's not a great pass. He then whips it, he bullets it into the forehead of George Furbank. And I think it's Cam Redpath, I forget now, but someone picks up the ball, gets it to van der Merwe, and it's bye-byes. I mean, there's still, as we've said many times on this pod, there is just something exhilarating about seeing somebody that big move that quickly. He is quite something. To say, I think I read that he's an elite all-round contributor. I think he is significantly better in attack than he is anywhere else. That's not a criticism. I think that is absolutely his super strength. I don't think he is selected because he's...
No, that's his MO.
An all-rounder. That's what he does. Like, he's not... For someone of that size, he's not destroying people in defence. His kicking game, I couldn't really tell you. I'm sure it's fine, but I couldn't really tell you. It's not what he's there for. But I do love the idea of being a bit South African about it and picking specialists for what they're good at and actually saying, well, we'll work on the rest, but shit, you're good at that. It's a bit like the Emmanuel Faye-Wabosso thing. He's only played a couple of minutes here, but comes on and has an impact and immediately looks unbelievably strong, man. Quick and strong. And you think, well...
Watch his vision. Like when he's... That's just off the cuff. He's just looking. He's hanging behind. But good communication. I'm not sure who was on at the scrum half there to pick him out, but brilliant. Brilliant ears to hear him come around. It's the pace that does everyone, though, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is. And just so strong in contact and all those things. But then almost like, because we are rugby people, or perhaps it's just us locks, we're English. It's like, yeah, but what's he like in the air? What's he like defensively? Yeah, okay. I've watched all his Chiefs games this year. They're running a blitz, which should help him with England. And there are times when he's looked out of position. He's looked a bit all at sea. All right. Well, how about when he gets the ball, he's an absolute nightmare and we help him with the rest. I like that idea. And van der Merwe is not quite that. He's not a liability anywhere, but he is just so far ahead in terms of attack than anyone that currently playing for England. He was fantastic at the weekend. And I think I've got a mate who's a Scottish mate, and he texts me and said, all we're hearing about is how poor England were and how we didn't have to work for this and that. I said, well, there is a balance here. Like, Scotland were definitely the better side. There's no question. But I don't remember watching an England game where they made almost like we're not allowed to, you know, we're a high performance nation. It's not tier one anymore, is it? But a tier one game where a team makes so many errors, just simple errors.
I know. Like, that,
yeah.
The Furbank drop ball or the pass. I mean, it is great pace from Van der Merwe, but that is a mistake. And I know that's what happens in rugby. You feed off teams' mistakes. The blitz defense was all over the shop when Hugh Jones goes through, and that's probably why. That probably just shows you the combination takes a little bit of time. Ollie Lawrence and Henry Slade. Henry Slade's looking for the pass out the back. Ollie Lawrence and Ford have basically got the same person, and that's where the damage is done, because Ford's pushed out with Danny Kerr, but I think it's Tuipulotu has just held Lawrence, and he just goes through way too easy. You shouldn't be going through on a play like that nowadays, because you would have done that in training. You would have defended that in training every single time, because that's a standard stock play of a 12 taking it. So miscommunication, call it what you want, just combinations not working, a new combination. Slade wouldn't have played too many times with Lawrence, would he?
No, the back line never played together before. And that is a real thing. I mean, these aren't excuses from an Englishman. It could make a massive difference, but they just looked so disjointed and so incohesive. I was, you know, shocked is the wrong word. I wasn't. I had my feet up with Craig Chalmers having a pint and a plate of chicken stew.
Yeah, he texted me to say that when, who scored the first try for England? I've forgotten now.
George Furbank.
He said when he scored that try, you stood up and shushed everyone, went like that, shh.
No, I didn't. I was quite chuffed. It was great. A great start from England, but they just, yeah. I think fell apart probably isn't quite right, but they defensively, they're still learning this system. So it's easy to say we should be patient. What else are we going to do? We're fans watching a team, and actually, of course, we're going to be patient and it will take time, but didn't quite come together in an attack. It just isn't happening at all. That was a lovely indicator of how England might play, but that was one of the last times I think they sent a load of options steaming to the line at the same time, and really caused the Scotland defenders to think, oh my God, what's happening? Who should I hit?
Well, Furbank was in the squad for that reason, wasn't he?
Yeah.
To add more attack and shape to the team. Now, what do you do now for the next game? Because you can't, there has to be some consistency in selection, especially because England are similar to Wales at the moment. They don't know their best team, you know, so you can't change the team every single week. Is it a case of, right, Furbank, we need him in our team because he's that good and he's been playing that well and he adds another element to our attack? Or does Freddie Stewart come back in to shore up the back and to be a safe pair of hands? Where do you think selection should change?
What I think is if you're playing against a team, now you played in the backs, right? So you tell me if this is inaccurate. And of course, it's not a rule, it's just a tendency. I think if you're against a team that you absolutely know is going to steam out of the blocks and try and blitz you, it's hard to deal with, but there are various things you can do. You can stand really, really deep and actually pass back really, really deep and actually work your way around them because they're narrow and they're flying up. So you work your way around them in that sort of that wide channel, and you almost go back and around. That can really work. You can run intricate, really, really last second plays at the line, like the one that sent Hugh Jones through against England. You can do that. But another thing, in terms of kicking, is quite often you'll find that people pelt the ball effectively, because if everyone is steaming off the line, if you leave your wingers back to cover kicks with your fullback, there's quite easy space to access by going back and around or cross-field kicks. So quite often you send the wingers up to a point as well. So you just boot it over their head, so the ball is instantly behind 13 or 14 oncoming defenders. So I always think against blitz defenses, there's a bit less kicking to compete. There's a bit more boot it long, because the further you kick it, the further the ball is behind all of these advancing defenders. They've got more work to do. So to that end, I think you almost don't need Freddie Stewart, because most of the kicks are going to be reasonably long and easy to take. So you're better off having a counter-attacking fullback. So I think you don't necessarily need a king of the air when you've got a blitz defense, because people aren't necessarily putting it up as much. They're kind of just booting it back over your head, almost going for distance and grass because you've got so far to get back to help your fullback. So I think, but I don't know, maybe.
I don't know. I know what you mean, but it's not all off first phase, is it? It's second, third phase, fourth phase. Kick the challenge. Yeah, I mean, Finn Russell is probably the ideal player to play against a blitz mind. Like if you're playing against a blitz, you need someone like that at 10, maybe George Ford as well, because they see things that other players don't. And your kicking game has to be spot on. Like your attacking kicking game. I think if you're playing against a team like England, there is so much space in those wide channels. But the key is set piece. Because if you get poor quality set piece ball, that blitz defense is amazing. Because that has a knock-on effect, doesn't it? If the scrum's going back, if it takes a little bit of time, if the delivery's not right off the line out, it's an extra 2 or 3 meters that blitz can just gobble up. I don't know. I think, I mean, the blitz does work for England when they get it right, but it is such high risk that if it doesn't go right, then you're making big gains, aren't you? Huge gains.
Yeah, and I keep hearing people, tell me what you think about this. I keep hearing people like, I'll tell you who I bumped into was Mark Atkinson, you know, Aki from Gloucester.
Yeah, yeah.
Every time I see him, I forget he's about 6'5". He's enormous.
Yeah, he's a huge lump.
Huge guy. So I bumped into him and we were just talking about it because we're boring guys. But he was like, you know, we had a conversation around, yes, you're blitzing, but if so-and-so or Henry Slade or whoever, Ollie Lawrence sees that a drift, you've got to step out and take your man and you've got to be flexible. And it's like, that's fine. If you're all about to shoot up and someone makes a call and you change, but actually if you're steaming up and you step out of a system that everyone's learning, what you've done is step out of a system. So next time it happens, the lads unconsciously or consciously won't rely on you to be in the right place. So it's easy to say, oh, he should have drifted then or whatever, but everyone has to do it. You can't step out of a system because then you will shaft everybody and no one, yep. You know, so you can't just say move up and read it. It's like you almost have to make a call in your first couple of steps or before you take a couple of steps. You can't just move up and one guy just buggers off. Like you can't do
that. You run at full pelt, mate. You can't change direction.
Yeah.
Kicking one out is key, I think, as well, because if you kick off source, you can obviously see that as a winger or a centre, you can see that ball being transferred to the boot and you do have time, I think, to adjust slightly. If you kick one out, which the nine then comes into play, so if you can, as an attack, if you can get your nine involved as well, you can kick one out. If you kick one out, that means the wing has to come up that little bit further and there is so much space out there. So much space. The kick has to be good. If the kick's not good, the cover will come across. But if the kick is good, you're on front football. All of the blitz defenders can't recover in time because they're sprinting up. It means they've got to stop, run back. But you do have to be, I would say, 90%+ accurate to be able to get outside the blitz. If you're not,
you are screwed.
It will gobble you up. Yep. And that's where it can be so effective. But England got it wrong and maybe they just have to readjust. They have to learn. I'm sure there'll be conversations between 10, 12, 13 about how not to get broken again in that situation by Hugh Jones. I would say Sione Tuipulotu, you know, great vision, be able to put him through like that because you've got so much to think about as a 12.
Jeez, he's some player, eh?
He is some player. Him and Bundiaki,
yeah.
I love them. They're brilliant. They've got the whole repertoire of skill sets, mate.
Yeah,
honestly, their attacking, kicking games are great. Defensively, solid. Vision, amazing. Passing game, great. Got it all.
They're improving. Like, their games are becoming more rounded. They're better players than they were 3 or 4 or 5 years ago. They've always been powerful and direct and a nice, you know, nice set of skills. But actually, they are so much better than they used to be. They look really well coached. They look like they've got, I think, what you call these days, a growth mindset. But they are improving all the time. Like, they're such good players. And I don't know, England's selection will be interesting because it's easy to say, well, you've got to start Finn Smith because it hasn't worked. It hasn't quite worked. You've got to start Finn Smith. You've got to start them. Okay, it's Ireland at home and it's big. England are staring down the barrel of winning 2 games at a Six Nations again, which for England shouldn't be only winning two games. It's not a God-given right. Of course it's not. But there's a huge amount of resource, a large number of very good players in the Gallagher Premiership, which is a brilliant league. You know, lots of other teams from other leagues wouldn't mind a part of the Gallagher Premiership. So you shouldn't be only winning two games. What I would say is that, well, that selection will be fascinating for one, but having watched France, Italy, if we move on to that, England have a lot less to fear from France at the moment than we all thought they might at the beginning of the tournament. They lost Jonathan Donti basically halfway through the game for a pretty obvious upright tackle, red card, yellow bunker turned red. I didn't quite know how it wouldn't be a red in it. It was a red in the end. So, but nonetheless, even when he was on, he wasn't utilised well at all, not really. And they just never looked like putting it together really in terms of attack. They look really disjointed, and it looks like, I could be talking rubbish, but it looks like the World Cup hangover is a big one in France, and it's almost non-existent in Ireland. So the Irish mindset has really helped them, and they said, we believe we're the best team in the world, or one of the best teams in the world. We're going flat out still. France are, they look a shadow of the team at the moment that we saw at the beginning of that, leading into the last World Cup.
DuPont. Like, I know you can't, it's a team of 15, but he plays in arguably the most important position for him. And they look totally different without him, because
totally different. Yeah.
He dictates where they play, how they play, pace of they play, everything comes through him because he's that good. And I don't think I've ever looked at a team and thought there's one player there that has more influence in a game than anybody else than I've ever seen than DuPont of France. Mm. I'm trying to think of a team in my head now that one player has that much effect.
Yeah.
He's that good. He is the best player in the world.
And Maxime Lucu, who's been playing nine, who was DuPont's understudy the last season or two, he plays at Bordeaux with Mathieu Jalibert, who plays 10. And for Bordeaux, leading, they've just been in amazing form, and he's a brilliant player. He's a brilliant player, Lucu. Like, when you I watched a few whole Bordeaux games, and on the recommendation of a mate, Dave Beresford, who knows his French rugby, so you've got to watch these games. You've got to watch Lucu and Jalibert. And I know it's club rugby, but man, so good. Lucu's so good at running a game. And you thought,
God, shows you the level now, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, you think, God, it's difference. Just another world-class scrum half, but it just hasn't worked, or it just isn't working. And that's why I think Nohan Le Garec, he's only 21 on the bench, the Racing scrum half, he's got areas like, you know, he'll put the odd box kick out on the full, he'll try and make a break when he shouldn't, he'll fling the odd pass to Jupiter, but actually, he's a proper threat, and I wonder if he might get the start next week, I wonder if he might, because it just isn't working at the moment. They really, really don't look great. And Sean Edwards after the game said, look, we've gone a man down for a good chunk of the game, for half a game, and we've got the draw. Could be worse. Defence was all right.
Agreed. What about their set piece? That's what worries me for Wales in a couple of weeks' time would be the physicality they've got, because they are physical. They've got a physical pack. And we saw what Ireland did to the Welsh scrum. We saw what Ireland did with their carries, even though Wales scrambled pretty well defensively.
Yeah.
I just worry about that power.
Well, Gregory Aldrich's a massive loss. If he don't know if he's going to play against Wales, he's a massive loss and would be to probably any team in the world. But Cross, who normally plays six, he played eight, and he was really, really good. You wouldn't say he's quite in Aldrich's league as an eight, but he was really, really good. Cross carried really well, but they do have Malvaka's a brilliant carrier. Marchand carries well when he comes off the bench. You know, you've got Weenie Antonio. You're right to worry about the set piece, because they got a lot of long, strong boys in their lineouts. They get up nicely when they're on it, and their scrum. The problem you've got is that they've got Weenie Antonio on the tight head, and whoever plays as right-hand lock, Tuilagi played the other day, and he actually played really well when he was on. You've got 100 and, let's just call it 150 kilos with 150 kilos behind him, both of whom have got venomous intentions in the scrum these days, and it is really hard. You know, Danelli Fischetti, the Italian loose, said, I love that guy. I think he's a brilliant player. I think he's a really, really good prop. But him plus his second row, I mean, you are talking about a 60, 70 kilo difference in weight, just the two-on-two on the side of the scrum. Back rows add a bit and all that, but the French back rows are massive. They pick long guys. You know, Charles Olivon is 6'6". You know, so they pick big guys. So there is just only so much you can do if you are, if you're not heavyweights and you get properly out the blocks, they can tune you up.
What I'm hoping for is
they're a problem.
Quite a bit of lack of self belief and confidence from the French team, which is going to happen, and is at Cardiff, which will make a bit of a difference.
Yeah, I think you're right, I think you're right. But France don't look anywhere near it, and Italy at the end. I mean, Capuozzo was the guy most likely to score. Menoncello, we keep waiting for him. He looks like he's going to star at some point, but he hasn't quite done it yet. Out on the wing, he's a bit less likely to, you might argue. But the kick at the end, I've rewatched the last kick, poor old Paolo Garbisi, and I feel like perhaps there was a case there for it to be reset. And of course, saying these things in hindsight is really easy, but when you're in it, so we're commentating, we're not under anywhere near the pressure that people are on the field, like referees, officials, and all that. But there's an awful lot of movement in front of Garbisi, considering the shot clock is ongoing, and you just wonder if
There wasn't movement until the ball fell over, and then there was a bit of a lack of knowledge, I think, from the French players start walking towards it thinking it was open play when it's not. I think the problem was then he only had 10 seconds to put the ball down and kick it, so whichever way
holding it, but he'd got a kick whichever way he's knackered position just before that, because he's gonna nail this.
I'm thinking if the ball doesn't fall over, he nails it. But then that moment then where he has to rush his walk back. So not really. I think just shows you. I mean, what were conditions like there, Dave? It wasn't that bad, was it?
Nope.
The windy.
Nope.
It shows you how important
the roof was shut.
Yeah, of course it was. But it shows you how important it is to make sure that the ball is secured properly on the tee.
Yeah, I felt really sorry for him. He came on I was standing behind Topsy Ojo when he interviewed him after the game, and with the bits I could hear where I'm just really sorry, it's my fault, I'm really sorry to all the fans and players or something like that, and you just think, oh, you poor bloke. I mean,
poor bloke, but it's his job to make sure the ball is securely on the tee, to make sure he's got the right tee, there's the right length that can hold the ball.
You are an unforgiving bastard.
I'm not, mate, but that is a kicker's job, and I feel for him, but it's obviously he had the weight distribution from where he's angled the ball on the tee hasn't worked. He's not put it down correctly.
So he's only got himself there was no wind or rain.
Which is the first part of his job, is to get that ball securely on the tee.
I felt for him.
Yeah. I did feel for him. I'm human after all. But
it would have been like you're the same as me, you know, I'm at Scotland and England lose, and I know the scoreboard suggests otherwise, but it was a reasonably comfortable victory for Scotland. They were definitely the better side. I definitely want England to win, but I can still have a good day, you know, even when my team, in inverted commas, lose. I can still enjoy my day, wish England had won, talk honestly about it and all that. But in a game like France-Italy, I genuinely got no vested interest in who wins other than being a sports fan and being part of the media. So if I could have chosen what happened, it would have been France to just rampant absolutely back to their best, because it makes the next two fixtures mega. I'd love them to have scored 70 points and Damien Penaud to have scored 5 tries. But because France are just undercut, they just looked undercut. They don't look a great team at the moment. Then it switches, and I actually felt gutted at the end, because the great story here is Italy winning. That's the great story.
We love an underdog. Everyone loves an underdog. Yeah. Everyone loves someone that isn't expected to win.
So in terms of the story, it was a shame, but it was probably about right, because it was two teams that just weren't quite at it. And Italy, up until that point, I think I said it in comms, you know, they'd shown something approaching zero composure in the French third for the whole game. Whenever they'd got there, they'd found a way to chuck the ball on the floor, lose it at the breakdown, pass it on the full into touch, like do something where the coach must be thinking, how on earth have you managed to do that? And then they showed composure when it mattered to score the try, but brutal for them. I mean, just brutal. But that's sport, Tommy. And someone said afterwards, it's like kissing your sister. It's like Australians love saying that when it's a draw, but I never quite understand that saying. It's like I don't want to kiss my sisters. My sisters are lovely, but I would regard kissing my sisters as a loss, not a draw. But anyway.
Yeah, well, in this country, yeah.
I don't have any sisters in any other country. Yeah, but anyway, it was a great weekend and high drama at the end, and actually the game in Lille needed that because it wasn't great up until that point. It was two not great teams slugging it out a bit. But to offer the sort of comment that a 10-year-old would make, shit, some of those French boys are big, mind. You're down on the touchline and you're like, we're used to massive men. Honestly, mate, you've got Weenie Antonio is so big. The head on him. He's so big. And then Roman Taufa-Fanua walks past. And yeah. Weenie Antonio looks like a 15-year-old with a beard. You know, he's so big.
Even Fiku's a massive bloke, mate. Even
massive guy.
Olivon
so
is huge.
Big. Like, yeah. Aldrit always, I always think to myself, he carries so well and powerfully for someone who's not that big. He is that big.
Yeah.
I met him at the weekend. He is big from behind. I was like, who is that?
Yeah.
So you're... Yeah. Blokes like me and you, we like to think, well, the lads aren't much bigger now. They're just in better condition. No. They are like trees, some of these boys. They're like oak trees. You see these lads walking past. They're not normal, fella. Like,
yeah. No, I know. I know. Yeah. Well, I think that will do us, boy. It's been a long one.
Yeah, well done, guys. Keep going.
Enjoy this rest week.
Well, no, I'm flat out again as of early tomorrow morning now. That's it.
All right. Well, try and get your breath back somewhere.
Be all good.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm not that flat out. I'm doing 3 days, mate. Come on.
We'll have a little chat next week. I've got a couple of games this weekend.
Oh, well done, boy.
And I can't talk Monday because I've got to walk. So maybe we'll do Tuesday.
Oh, is Monday your big walk, is it?
Monday's a big walk.
Well done, mate. Yeah. Well done, boy. So, you're a good kid. You've got a big heart, yeah? You've got an engorged heart wrapped in salted butter. All right.
Ooh, talking of food, I've got a rolled pork belly in the oven. And you won't hear this in the edit because I'll obviously edit it, but that's what I had to run off to turn it down a little bit.
Oh,
forgot it was up high.
Field
and Flower, obviously.
If you ever want, Field and Flower, obviously. If you ever want Phil Vickery to turn up somewhere, anywhere, tell him there's a rolled pork belly on offer. All right.
Yeah.
No one likes pork belly as much as our Phil. Okay. Right. Ta-ra.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach!
Give me great food.
Tacos!
Give me adventure.
Hiking!
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise!
Give me some smiles.
Cheese!
Give me more beaches.
Beaches!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.